It's a pleasure to welcome everyone to this, the 31st installment of the Phenotype Speaker Series. I'm your host, Dr. Orion Buskey, and today we'll be talking about the Undiagnosed Hackathon, Driving Diagnosis Through Global Collaboration. We have a number of wonderful guests, Hélène Sedarup, Dr. Wendy Van Zelst, Dr. Angelica Delgado-Vega, and Dr. Eric Klee, all joining us today. So over the course of the next hour or so, we'll be going over an interview with and discussion with the panel. We'll be taking Q&A from the audience at the end, so please submit your questions through the Zoom Q&A box. And I'll just start off the top by giving everyone a quick introduction to Phenotypes. So I'm one of the co-founders at Phenotypes. We're on a mission to accelerate genomic medicine. We're a Canadian startup. We build software to help health systems deliver genetically informed care, from family history and pedigree management to cancer risk for hereditary conditions and rare disease diagnosis. We have a genomic health record system that helps streamline workflows and power genomics research. So, with that, I would love to have each person introduce themselves. I'll start just with myself and then hand it off to Hélène next. So, my background is I have a PhD in computer science and computational biology from the Hospital for Sick Children and the University of Toronto. My background's on how do we build algorithms to help diagnose rare genetic conditions. And then we spun Phenotypes out of a lot of that work. And so it's a pleasure to continue that out in the translational space of bringing this technology into the commercial world and into hospitals. Hélène, would you like to introduce yourself next?
Yes, thank you for having us here. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I'm Hélène Sederoth, and I'm living in Sweden, and we are Sweden-based, but we work international. And I'm the founder of and the president of Inna Foundation. I'm initiator of Undiagnosed Hackathon, and a co-founder and board member of UDNI, Undiagnosed Disease Network International. And we have arranged 13 conferences now. And I'm also co-founder of Undiagnosed Disease Network Foundation and co-organizer of the Undiagnosed Hackathon. Thank
Yeah, thanks so much, Ellen. Well, Wendy, would you like to go next?
Yes, sure. Thanks for having me here as well. I'm Wendy Van Zelst. I'm a clinical geneticist and head of the Department of Human Genetics at the Radboud University Medical Center in Nijmegen, the Netherlands, and also the head of the Department of Clinical Genetics at another university medical center in Maastricht, the Netherlands. I am the national coordinator for the designation procedure of centers of expertise on rare diseases in the Netherlands, and one of the two, well, Dutch representatives in the European Reference Network Board of Member States, and was lucky to be the host of the second Undiagnosed Hackathon.
Thanks, Wendy. Angelica, would you like to go next?
Hi, my name is Angelica Delgado Vega, and I am a medical doctor. I am originally from Colombia, but I work in Sweden, in Stockholm, as a specialist in clinical genetics at Karolinska University Hospital. I'm also a researcher at Karolinska Institute in Rare Diseases, where I coordinate the clinical coordinator of the Undiagnosed Diseases Program at the Undiagnosed Diseases Network Sweden, under the leadership of Professor Anne Nordgren. And our team here at Karolinska co-organized the first Undiagnosed Hackathon together with the Wilhelm Foundation. And I'm super excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Angelica. And Eric.
Yeah, good day, everyone. Super excited to be here. I'm a professor of biomedical informatics at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and I'm science director of research data and digital innovation for the institution, as well as a PI in the U.S. Undiagnosed Disease Network and board member of the UDNI, and partnering with Hélène on planning for this year's on Hackathon.
Great. Thanks so much, Eric. Thank you all. It's such a pleasure to have all of you on this webinar. I love you all so much, and you are wonderful. So it's been fantastic seeing all of you at the past Undiagnosed Hackathons and have everyone together to share this with a broader community of attendees in the genetics space. So I'd love to start with just giving people a little bit of an overview of what the undiagnosed hackathons are. What are these things that we are talking about? And so I think I'll start with that and then maybe hand it around to see if anyone wants to add things from your particular perspectives or backgrounds on it. But broadly, the undiagnosed hackathons are a new initiative that the Wilhelm Foundation, the Undiagnosed Disease Network International, and different sites have come together to make happen over the last 2 years, and then happening again this year, to really, over an intense period of 48 hours or so, bring together a bunch of clinical experts in genetics and rare diseases with bioinformaticians and technical experts to rapidly try to solve the unsolved cases, unsolved patients who are living with these undiagnosed conditions and find them answers, while at the same time building new models for collaboration, for knowledge sharing around countries around the world, basically bringing together this international audience of experts and trainees to try to actually make a really big difference in the lives of some of these sort of the hardest cases that have stumped each of the individual groups on their own, and that only through this collaboration can we you know, bring in the resources and bring in the teams and work together intensely to try to solve them. Would anyone like to add anything to that?
You know, the only thing I would say is I think one of the really cool things that the hackathon has brought about is this change in. We've had this Undiagnosed Disease Network International and other organizations, and a lot of that has been around networking, connections, dissemination, information, awareness, and this becomes much more of an action-focused activity. So I think that's what is really exciting. You're getting people together that are having direct, meaningful collaboration and impact on individual participants, people living with undiagnosed diseases across the globe, and that is really energizing.
Yeah, it's a really hands-on event, actually. So that's well, it brings lots of positive energy. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, did you want to?
No, I was just going to add that it borrows the hackathon concept that has been applied to many other things, that is very intense. So it's 48 hours event, and that under those, but. A lot of samples and data are processed in advance then. And then when people come, everything it's ready. And then people is divided in teams, and the teams are called smileys and dinosaurs and animals. And so it's super fun. And then each team is also composed of people from all around the world, from different disciplines. So in each team, we make sure that there is from professors to PhD students and from clinicians, very experienced clinicians, researchers, and to bring that, like all the perspectives to the table and to work intensely during this time frame.
Thank you so much, Angelica. Hélène, what do you like to add?
Yes. Yeah. I just would like to add that this was something we thought about when we founded Wilhelm Foundation. It was actually a long time ago, 1997, we talked about that we would like to have a World Congress with to solve the unsolved families. But that it was not time then. It was, no one talked about the undiagnosed in that way. So it's so wonderful to see this happen. Thanks to all to Angelica and Wendy, and so it's really wonderful.
Thank you, Hélène, and to you and Mick. I think this is, yeah, I think this initiative is wonderful. It builds on sort of that case sharing model that was happening within the Undiagnosed Disease Network International, and then exactly as you were saying, Wendy makes it more action oriented and brings people in to try to address these in a very short period of time. I'd like to start by just reminiscing to the origins of this, and I remember a lot of us were around at a dinner in Vienna, if I recall, and we were all discussing. There were a few other wonderful people there too, and we were, brainstorming ways of innovating. And the idea of running this sort of as a diagnostic hackathon came up. I guess for Ellen and Angelica, you were two of the people, I think, along with Anne Nodgren, who really took this idea and turned it into a reality for the very first one. I would love to just hear your what inspired you to actually do that, because there's so much work that obviously has to happen in order to translate something like that into the real world and make it a success.
Actually, we didn't know about how much work it was. We thought that we asked Angelica and Norgren if they could do this together with us. And we only had 3 months. We asked if they could have it on undiagnosed day. And it was 3 months. So, and Angelica said, no. And then we said, May, no. And then it was in June. But it was wonderful. Anne said yes, and Angelica said yes immediately. So.
Yes, not so soon, because as you say, we were brainstorming. I think Wendy was also there, right at that table we were, and then it was so innovative. It was crazy. It was very meaningful. So it was very hard to say no, we don't want to do it. It was a big risk, but we saw the potential of such an event, a social model directly. And then we sat immediately here, Helen, Mick, and us here on the Undiagnosed Disease Program to, okay, how are we going to do this? And we started like, okay, we will have two or three patients. But then Helen was like, no, we want patients from all around the world. Because it was initially only Swedish patients, we thought we will start like as a pilot. And then it was like, okay. And then we had a patient from Africa, two from Africa, and then one from India, and one from Pakistan, and one from the US. And then, and then it was like, okay, what data we will generate? And it was like, all in, we want to generate the best we can do. And we need to bring the best people we can from all, we will bring them here. For as a patient, as a doctor, it was a dream. Imagine you have a child that nobody understands what they have, and then suddenly you have this big opportunity of having the best tools available and the best minds there. So it, of course, I mean, what was not to like? Well, of course, we wanted to do it.
And I'm so glad that you did. I would love to go around and hear each person who was there for that first undiagnosed hackathon. What if there was a particular moment from that made them feel like, yes, this is working. This is amazing. We need to keep doing this as long as we possibly can. Ellen, would you like to start?
Yes, to me it was when all the families was in front of everybody, and I was looking at the families, and then with siblings, and it was so powerful. And then all the ones who were looking at them, I got still goosebumps. It was so powerful.
That was one of my most powerful memories of the undiagnosed hackathons, and that's become a tradition at each one to have some of the families and living with these undiagnosed conditions actually be there with all of the clinicians and researchers. I love it so much. Whose idea was that? Do you know? Was that? I think because it's so unique to this sort of an event.
Yes, it was Wilhelm Foundations.
Amazing. I think
Because
that's
we
just
think that it's very important to bring the families in, and we would like to change it from the patient to the families, to the children or and adults who live in an undiagnosed disease instead of patients. So it was.
really puts patients at the center of it and grounds the
Yes.
entire event. I think it's wonderful. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, since you are so much more than a patient.
Would anyone else like to share some of their thoughts
Yes.
or moments when it was? Wendy, please.
Yeah, it was actually the start, right, of the first hackathon, and it was really powerful. It was emotional. It was, well, it's hard to describe, I think, the emotions that run through the crowd and the audience, and also the parents and the patients themselves, I think. And it really set, well, the tone. If you are there and you see those patients and those parents sharing their story and their struggles and what they have encountered and why they feel the importance of this hackathon, then you get an energy that you want to go into those rooms, and you want to look at the data, and you want to diagnose these patients. And of course, as a clinician, we are used to talking to these patients and well, hearing about their struggles, but lots of people in the audience do not ever see a patient themselves. So it's really helpful in well, creating such a positive energy and wanting to solve, well, let's say, have a solve the puzzle and diagnose these patients. Yeah.
As someone who's on the more technical side, I completely relate. It was generally, it did not have the opportunity to engage directly with the people who are living with these undiagnosed conditions that I was working on algorithms and software and system to try to solve. But this was one of the first opportunities that I had to be in a place where I could engage with them and see the people who were trying to help clinicians off and have that as part of their daily basis. But on the technical side, it is much less common, and I think that was wonderful. Eric or Anjelka, anything you would like to add?
And
I
well, if I can add
oh
something more, because this
please.
was the first thing, and then
Yes.
afterwards we went into different rooms and sat together with, well, all sorts of experts that you didn't know up front. And it was really, that was also very, well, energizing, actually. And it's well, I experienced it as a sort of a learning community or something. So it was really nice to have this collaboration, hear different perspectives, how to look into the data, how to look into the clinical phenotype, mixing, well, expertise actually, and was really that was great as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I could add to that. Wendy did a nice job. I think those are the top two things I was thinking about as well. I mean, obviously the interactions of just seeing and interacting with the participants, the families was amazingly energizing. Breaking out into these different rooms and meeting people from all over the world with different expertise and everybody just marching to the same sort of mission of finding answers for these undiagnosed individuals. I think the other thing that jumped out, and the first hackathon I went to was last year, was I don't think we had broken out into our different rooms for less, it might have been less than an hour. And all of a sudden, you could hear a murmur kind of come up all over the place. And it was the first diagnosis that had already been made. And just that, the way that just raised the energy and excitement, brought goosebumps, I think, to me. Does right now, actually, remembering that, it's like, wow, this is really happening. And to take a individual that had had an undiagnosed disease for so long, and within 1 hour of getting all these amazing people together, we had an answer. That was something that really stood out.
Thanks for For bringing that up, Eric. Yeah, I think maybe Angelica, I'll ask you, as we mentioned earlier, the amount of work that has to go in before the event happens in terms of data sample collection, sequencing analysis, pulling this data together, and then making it available to all of the event participants on the day of so that they can move that quickly. I was curious if you'd could share a little bit about everything that went into to making that happen, especially for the first event, and what are the technologies that are being used for the undiagnosed hackathons, and how are how have we set this up so that the participants can, in a short, compressed, 48 intense hours, make a real difference and solve some of these cases. Oh, I think you're muted.
Sorry, yeah, it was a challenge also, but I think this energy that was felt during the event, it was felt every even before during the organization, because this hackathon idea was so challenging, in a good way, so people wanted to do their best. So from, for example, talking to the IT team here at Karolinska, also more or less explaining what we wanted to do, and they were like, we were like, we need a server at least 50 terabytes. And they were like, you are gonna have our last machine. I'll give you 100. Everyone wanted to do their best always. And from the transport company, because we did long-read sequencing, and that requires high molecular weight extraction. We did also RNA sequencing, and that requires also processing during 48 hours. And we were like transporting samples from all around the world. So this, I remember this woman in the transport company was like, I will make sure that your samples, like from the moment the doctor leaves them to the courier, and that I will be sure it goes in every truck, in every plane that it has to do, so that it arrives here on time. And here in the lab also, there was someone always ready to receive the samples and process them immediately. And that's like for organizing a future hackathon. That's, I think, the thing that has to be done with good time in advance, because sometimes it doesn't work, and we had to retake samples and these things. And then, well, all the routines in the hospital. We are a university hospital, so this has to did have. Had to go with the clinical flow and with all the routines. So, to make sure that everyone was informed of what was going on, and then to process the data, we had pipelines here at in clinical genomics, in our genomics infrastructure, that could be used, and that could be it was a perfect opportunity, a golden opportunity to test those new pipelines, and of course all the logistics that the Wilhelm Foundation took care of, all the traveling, food arrangements, accommodation, everything. So and also something was to collect the phenotype, because we needed comprehensive phenotype from all these patients. So that was a task that was put on the coordinator of the local UDP, and to translate everything, to standardize it, to put it in a standardized format, and using our phenotype tool here at Karolinska. And we discuss in the Undiagnosed Disease Network International Diagnostic Working Group meetings the cases in advance. That was done also for the second hackathon, to go through, to have a hypothesis. So it was a full time job for those months. I think Wendy can confirm that it's like
Absolutely. Being a
mom in the free time.
When do you somehow, after participating in the first undiagnosed hackathon in Sweden, you very generously offered to host it at Radboud the following year, which turned it into an annual event, which is amazing. How was that process for you? And were there lessons, that you learned from that? What did you build on, and how did you approach that challenge?
Yeah, of course there were lessons to learn and looking back, but I think overall the reason why I was so enthusiastic and immediately, actually said if Elaine and Mick were willing to and Nijmegen would be willing to host the next hackathon, because it's such a great event actually, and I think the outcomes of the first hackathon were great already. And of course, there were some challenges. You've done an amazing amount of work actually in a very short time period. So the first advice we got from from Angelica and her team is to start in time, and take your time to prepare well. And even with that advice, actually, I think we had a pretty low start, because I was the only one actually that was there at the first hackathon, so I had to, engage a team, and I wasn't able to spend as much time as Angelica had spent, so I had to find someone who could do that. So we had a project manager actually that was very, very helpful and helped us with lots of things. Mick and Alain were there all the time. They had some more support as well, thinking out new strategies, how to encounter perhaps some challenges they had encountered the first time. So we, of course, were now more aware what type of shipment issues there could be getting the samples. We really had to, set some sort of a deadline actually, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to have the data there during the hackathon, things like that. And I think what was really also very nice next to the logistics is that we started off with a tools workshop. So that was really an idea from Mick and Ellen, that was really helpful to take everyone along before really, starting to look at the data.
That makes sense. Absolutely. So you have all of the participants can upskill a little bit in what is available for them to use to help accelerate their work over that time. Oh, thank you. I would like to let's shift the conversation a little bit to maybe take a step back and talk a little bit about some of the broader challenges that I think the undiagnosed hackathon is working to help solve. And I think part of this relates to the core questions of why do so many individuals still go undiagnosed despite sort of the advances in sequencing technology and the efforts that are in place in healthcare. Does anyone want to talk about that?
I can jump in and start,
Eric, great.
and I'm sure everyone else will add their own perspectives. I think, this is a really challenging space, right? We've had immense evolution in our ability to do molecular profiling with these new sequencing techniques, and that gets us to a certain space where an exome or a genome can identify a lot of variation, and there's a lot of knowledge now about what genes, which variants are linked back with disease. But I think the bigger challenge sometimes is in two areas. One is really good phenotyping of the individuals, really understanding what's going on, because that's going to drive a lot of the downstream tooling. And so having a combined expertise of thinking about, evaluating, asking questions about a patient or an individual and what they're presenting with, understanding what may or may not be present within the family, I think That's a huge thing that sometimes, in most instances, I would suggest or hypothesize, you know, an individual seeing a physician isn't going to get a big group of expertise from multiple different individuals, unless they're involved in a large network of some sort where there is a case conference that can be discussed. So I think that's one piece that absence of detailed clinical phenotypic information can provide problems. And then on the flip side, we have gotten very comfortable with the idea of sequencing genomically an individual and using that to diagnose what might be going on. But we know there's a lot of gaps there, right? We know that technologically, what we call short read sequencing has a lot of gaps in what they can identify. So some things like the hackathon continue to push the boundary of what we can do technologically with long read sequencing, with other modalities that maybe are not ubiquitously available to individuals across this planet. I think there's a lot of gaps in our understanding of what variation causes disease. And the hackathon starts to touch into that, where at least we have individuals from all over that are looking at this a field and bringing together, hey, I just read this paper, or I, you know, encountered this in a patient, and we should be looking at that in the individuals that we are evaluating here. And the last, I think, is, you know, that sort of that hope and hype of where we're going with analytics, with computer science, AI, and others. When we bring together expertise that's not just clinical genetics, not just laboratory, but also that analytical side in the hackathon, you're bringing in skills, you're bringing in ideas and new approaches that people are evolving every day out there and applying it to data, a massive amount of data on these individuals. So again, pushing the boundary on what's possible, I think is kind of a recurring theme with the hackathon.
It was amazing to have, for example, experts in mouse models, because you have this variant in this candidate gene, and then someone immediately could say, yeah, but the phenotype in animal models, it's very similar to your patient. And then another person that was saying, oh, I have a colleague working on this gene. Give me a moment, I will make a call. And all this is happening very quickly in real time. Maybe we have been able to solve these patients anyway, but it wouldn't have taken some hours. It would have taken weeks or months. So, and I think that's that one of the lessons that we brought to the clinic and to our day-to-day work. We need to look at this together, because the way we work is usually we do a test, and then someone looks at it, a bioinformatician, and then another person, and then another person. But we don't talk to. Well, we talk to each other, but we don't analyze because of the amount of samples that we in the clinical work have to answer every week. So we don't have the space to do this together every day. But we have to strive to create those spaces, because it's this discussion in this brainstorming and putting different expertise together where you really push what is possible. And
and I think well, hearing this, and I totally agree with everything that has been said. We had a striking let's say example at the second hackathon, because one of the patients that was diagnosed, actually the genetic variant was seen before during the first diagnostic test, but looking at the genetic variants and looking at, well, perhaps the phenotype description, it did not completely match with the clinical phenotype that was, well, let's say, available from the clinician point of view. But there wasn't no discussion, actually, to see if perhaps an immune phenotype was missed by the clinician or... wasn't there yet, because we also know that, well, sometimes, of course, more clinical symptoms will come over time. So that was really a striking example, actually, of how necessary it is for this field and for this patient group, actually, that we have combined analysis and combined discussions, how to look at the data and the clinical phenotype and how to interpret these data. So that was actually, well, striking. It was, and I can say it here, it was one of our patients, themselves. So it was one of our patients from our institute. So we really, well, changed our daily collaboration now and try to see how we can, well, connect even more, because we already did, but we can improve. That's what we showed. Yeah.
I think that it's so important with the phenotyping, and we, therefore, and as especially we saw that at the hackathons, and I therefore we Wilhelm Foundation now are going to have a focus on the phenotyping too. So on undiagnosed day, everybody is welcome on April 29th. But we think it's very important that also families, if the family can give, if the parent can give their for the child, give phenotyping. Or do the phenotyping, as we had at the at Karolinska and also in Nijmegen, the phenotyping tip to toe from Karolinska Hospital, and we are now doing a phenotyping for the families, so they can do it. It's a little bit tricky to do this, but so they can do, because you know what. When you go to a medical doctor, you don't talk about the small thing. You don't talk about it, but you know it, but you don't mention it to the doctors. You have so short of times, so you have to take all the important stuff. So therefore, I think it could be great to have.
This is a great discussion. I don't want to move it to a different topic too much. I think I think we've touched on sort of how important interdisciplinary collaboration is in this sort of an event, and how it's pulling all of those people together, and some of the benefits that come from it. I think one of the other dimensions in which the Undiagnosed Hackathon is unique is the engagement of patients and the engagement of people internationally, this international collaboration that is so, we talk about as being so important, especially in the rare disease space. Ellen, I wanted to ask you, I think as part of having something like this work, where we're bridging so many of these different let's say you're pulling people together across so many different groups, trust is so critical to this. I was curious if you could touch on maybe how the Undiagnosed Hackathon has helped to establish that trust between all of the participants and equality and inclusion.
Yes, it was something we thought about a lot. And one thing we decided very early was that we have to have this, of course, you have to have name tags, but without any title. So only the name. And but we think, and then we have had also the country, but we think that for the next hackathons, we will do it. The hackathons we always have can make it better and better. It has been wonderful, the two first, but you can do it better. And we can take away the countries, so everybody is equal. And otherwise, also it's important for the bioinformatics. They was very afraid how they could work with the geneticists and that. So therefore, it was so great, and they were so happy. Because they didn't work in silos, they worked together. And it was, when you went into a room at a hackathon, it was like, you could feel how they were working in the air. It was amazing. And so then we thought that it's also very important to make them all the ones to trust each other, to have dinners, which, and also some social events, so that even on these 48 hours you could make it. but it was it was very helpful. And then we are trying to do this inclusion even more. And hopefully we can have some in on the next and the future hackathons, some documents that we can sign that everybody has to be work for the inclusion and everyone is equal. And it, that's also for the families, very important.
Absolutely. So I guess I'm just checking in terms of time. We have about time for another topic or so, and then I'd like to. Looks like there are some questions coming in on the Q&A, and if people are joining as attendees and would like to ask questions, please do use the Q&A feature within Zoom now, and we'll go through those after. I think I'd like to turn the discussion to looking forward now, and I would. I guess a question to everyone is, how do you see the undiagnosed hackathon evolving over the coming years? And maybe are there any details you can tell us about the upcoming hackathon that is happening in 2025? And Angelica, would you like to start for how you see the undiagnosed hackathon evolving? Or how you would like to see it evolve?
Yeah, of course, it has to, because it's a legacy that what you have created, we have created together, is very unique, I think, and it is very inspiring, and all the lessons that are learned in every hackathon should lead to an improvement in terms of how you can optimize the time, how the tools available. I think the format with that it has to be global and multidisciplinary has really to be conserved, because that's a critical ingredient of the hackathons, that it's like this community that makes us stronger and this wish to collaborate. And the patient participation, because I think your perspectives are so valuable to us researchers. Maybe without the Wilhelm Foundation, we have done this in a completely different way. Probably there will be no names of patients there, no faces, no stories, just like a code, for example. And that would have been completely different, just to put an example. So I think you have done an amazing job, like, putting the patient's perspective there, and I think I also hope that the form the amount of people it should be more or less the same, to allow this participation to be personal. So I hope it doesn't become like 1,000 people event.
So these are about 100-150 people. Participants.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because it becomes another thing, and we had an idea, like we had some goals. The diagnosis, of course, it was an important goal, but it was this collaboration, this let's get together, let's think together, and it became so much more, like informal learning platforms, maybe more learning tools. That are my thoughts.
Thank you. And a bit of a maybe competition amongst industry for trying to get their tools in front of the best and brightest and most amazing sort of researchers and clinicians to have those technologies be available for pushing the boundary of what's possible. This seemed to be one of the things that I saw out of the last undiagnosed hackathon, and with the tools workshop, it sort of helped build this broader, hopefully, investment of resources and interest in what's happening here, and hopefully that will continue to grow to support those activities. Anyone else want to add?
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that Angelica has said. I think it's the number of participants and the involvement of the patient, that's something that, well, we have to keep it as it is, I think, and there's no need to change that. But of course, some competition of, well, let's say, what kind of tool or what kind of data really made a diagnosis possible would lead to some competition in the field, the technology field, perhaps. So that would be great if that is something that comes out of this. And I think then they would all be very willing to, well, contribute to the hackathon. And another thing that I would like to say is that this global hackathon, it would be great if we can have this as a yearly event. But then again, experiencing it myself, I really want to share it with all my colleagues. And that's not possible if you keep it as, well, let's say, limited as it is. So that's the reason why we have a sort of a local spin-off for all, colleagues in our departments, actually, that we use it ourselves. So we have a two-day meeting, also 48-hour meeting with all colleagues that are in the department, just as a, well, let's say a pilot, to see what comes out of it for ourselves and how can we benefit ourselves and what will be helpful for our interdisciplinary collaboration. And if that is successful, we are also thinking perhaps we can make it a national event. So not a global one, not as huge big as this one, but also on a national level, perhaps. So that's actually, we have a national conference upcoming in April. And I invited Elaine and Mick to be there. And we have a workshop on how we can improve the care for patients without a diagnosis. And would a national hackathon perhaps be something, that is great to organize on a national level as well. And because it is a limited number of participants you can have in this hackathon, it would be great if this, will be a spin-off of this hackathon for all the participants globally, then we will have, an improvement actually of the outcome of the hackathons.
Yes, that would be wonderful. And we hope that we can do that. And then we also can link from the hackathon, undiagnosed hackathon, to this, so we can see what's happening and how it's spread all over the world. So
We just did it 3 weeks ago, 5th or 6th of February. We had a national hackathon within our diagnosed network, and it was so appreciated. It was just one and a half day, and we tried to keep the same format as much as possible, and it was very, very appreciated for all the members of the undiagnosed network that we brought people from all around Sweden. We were 45 people, I think, and also interdisciplinary, and it was very engaging, and the comments after the event were more or less the same after the hackathon. It's such a unique experience for the people that, and so definitely I think you should do it, and everyone should have a national hackathon.
And oh, that's great. And I think that's a really, it's really exciting to see it inspire other modes of this sort of interdisciplinary collaboration and active, hands-on work in this sort of hackathon model being applied elsewhere in healthcare and in rare disease and diagnosed. This, I think, ties in nicely to one of the attendee questions from German, which is around basically the benefits then of an international hackathon versus a local hackathon. Is there anything that we're giving up by having it be national rather than the undiagnosed hackathon as an international effort? What do we get from having it be international and rather than just the national ones? I think the national ones are an amazing extension as well. Maybe Hélène, would you like to talk about that a
Yes.
little, since so much of your work is this sort of, you know, very much international and cross-border?
I think we need international hackathons because we have to work together to solve these 60% we can't solve today. So we really need everyone to work on this and to collaborate from all over the globe. So that's my, but I love these national hackathons too. And we really hope it will be national or regional.
But maybe I'd just add on that too. I think, you know, we need as many hackathons as we can possibly organize, international, local, national. One of the really cool benefits of the international is that you are bringing together people from all kinds of different backgrounds with different amounts of resources, different perspectives on disease that might be much more heterogeneous than what you get in a local environment. And so the possibilities there for cross-education both ways, and really bringing these unique perspectives to bear on the questions at hand are really huge. And I think that was borne out in what we experienced in Nijmegen, and likely as well in Sweden in the first hackathon. So I think that's one of the really, you know, immense benefits of the international hackathon is just this very complex, woven number of perspectives, expertise, and then educational opportunities.
And it builds a network, right? It builds collaboration. So even after the hackathon, you have this network and you have the opportunity to discuss a patient or discuss, well, let's say follow-up studies for a specific variant that was found. So it really creates an international network that helps share knowledge, that helps share collaboration and research, which will benefit us all.
And I just would like to add, like me coming from middle-income country, I think that seeing people there from low, middle, high-income countries, it adds incredible value because you see that there is so much competence and knowledge that and it becomes more clear for them. Okay, what do we need to take the next step? What is these people in the Netherlands doing? Just visiting your sequencing facility, your biobank, they build networks, they talk to the companies. And then because one of the aims of both William Foundation and the UDNI is to help the countries that need resources, is like through these conversations, it's much clearer what they really need, because sometimes you say, oh, they need sequencing machines, they need what, I don't know, computers, I think, but it's like, no, what we need is the pipelines, we need education, we need this knowledge transfer. That's what they need, and it becomes more clear when you're there face to face, or well, shoulder to shoulder working on a patient. So that you only get through an international one.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's absolutely absolutely true. And so I think the last question, or one of the last ones, we'll see how many we can squeeze in, but there's a question that seems to be coming up a few times on the Q&A relates to how can people get involved, and either as participants in future undiagnosed hackathons, or potentially if they have a patient who has an undiagnosed condition, can anyone speak to how people should be get involved in the future iterations of this?
Yes, in the future they can contact us at info@William Foundation. www.angelica.org. And both families who have undiagnosed relatives, and or if they are undiagnosed by themselves, and also participants who would like to participate at the hackathons. And Eric, please.
Yeah, no. So working very closely with Helene on the planning committee for this year's hackathon. We fully anticipate in the next number of weeks, week or two, that there'll be announcements going out, save the dates, calls for participants, calls for collaborators, application processes around that. So stay tuned and check out the Wilhelm Foundation's website and others for those announcements, or you can reach out to Helene or myself if you want direct information on that. But we're super excited about what's coming. So
yes,
right around the corner.
Amazing. Any final words from anyone? No? Okay.
I would like to thank you, Orion and Phenotips for what you are doing and for having this webinar.
Well, thank you. It is a pleasure. I'm so glad that we had the platform to help continue, bring all of you together and share the word about such an amazing initiative. We just love it so much and want to see it continue to grow and thrive. I really appreciate all the time for all of you joining and sharing your wisdom and expertise about the past and about the future of the Undiagnosed Hackathons. I cannot wait to see you all in person at the upcoming one. Thank you again. So for all of the participants, you'll see a feedback link in your browser when this webinar ends, as well as it will get emailed to you within the next day. Please take a minute to offer feedback to help us improve this series of webinars that we do, and help us bring more exciting speakers and cover more exciting topics for everyone. The email will also include a link to the speaker series page where you can receive alerts on upcoming series. That's available on the website, and stay tuned for our next webinar. And I guess, Ellen, you were talking about April 29th being Undiagnosed Day.
Yes.
Anything else you want to mention about that?
Yes, it will be a meeting with 2 days meeting, and we encourage everybody who are clinicians who will see undiagnosed families or children or adults on Undiagnosed Day to contact us. And we also would like to encourage everybody to go to Undiagnosed Day's website and follow the international what's happening. Thank you. Great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. Sorry for those whose questions we didn't quite have a chance to answer. I think we covered most of them in one way, shape, or form. Looking forward to seeing you all. Thank you so much.